Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
A lot of you have had your takes, your hot takes, your molten lava takes flying around. Let me get into this now. He announced his retirement on Saturday night, and it took 1 or 2 seconds for the molten lava to come flying in. Before I get into all the reaction to his decision, and I've got plenty of thoughts on that, I want to talk about the decision itself. Let's talk about the fact that a generational talent decided at 29 that it was time to walk away from the game. Now, in that moment when the news dropped, it was shocking. But then you start to think about it. And I mean, think about it rationally, not as an irrational, butthurt Colts fan. But when you really think about it rationally, the shock wears off and it makes a lot of sense. And that it's right. The absolute right call. And I'm happy this guy made that call. A couple of weeks back, I brought up the fact that Luck was not playing in a preseason game against the Browns, and that the issue he had been dealing with since March, a calf strain, had either moved or evolved or changed or grown or something. What it hadn't done in nearly 6 months since it had been noticed was heal. So it's clear from the news on Saturday night that it might not be close to healing, and that it was another part of a 4-year run of pain for Luck. He said it was a tough decision. In fact, he went on to say it was the hardest decision he's ever had to make. The hardest decision that he ever had to make. Quote, "I've been in this cycle of injury, pain, and rehab, and it's been unceasing and unrelenting, both in and out of the season, and I felt stuck in it. And the only way I see out of it is to no longer play football. It's taken my joy out of the game." End of quote. And he's made it clear this is not something that just happened. It's been ongoing, and he's tried to endure and get through it.
Sorry. I've been stuck in this process. I haven't been able to live the life I want to live. Taking the joy out of this game. And after 2016, where I played in pain and was unable to regularly practice, I made a vow to myself that I would not go down that path again. I find myself in a similar situation. And the only way forward for me is to remove myself from football in this cycle that I've been in. Come to the proverbial fork in the road.
You see, I'm not sure it's that even. It's not just a fork in the road. It was the end of one road and the start of another road. And it's pretty clear from watching that impromptu press conference that that was not a knee-jerk decision. Nor was that an easy decision. Nor is he taking the easy way out. If anything, everything around him would have been saying, keep going, stay at it. He was looking like he was on a team, the best Colts team that he ever played on. He was coming off the best season he had ever had. If he could miss the first few games, get right, then play, he could be looking at a Super Bowl run. But he chose the smarter path. See, Andrew Luck is a really smart guy. That, to me, is a really smart decision. And not only is that not weak, not only is that not cowardly, that's courageous. This is not about toughness or proving how much you love the game. And I'll get to you losers who think that that is what this is about in a moment. And not that I should have to do it, but let me remind you of all the hits that this guy has absorbed, all the injuries he has suffered. This is about somebody who's been living in physical and emotional pain for 4 straight years and was facing the possibility of that continuing without an end. So don't come in and tell me that you would have toughed it out through a calf strain. Because clearly it wasn't a calf strain. Because if it were a calf strain, Luck would have played through it. Hey, I get it. It sucks. I get it. The timing's not ideal. And I get it. It sucks. It really does. But I'll tell you why it sucks. It sucks because we'll never get to see how good this guy could have been. Because when he was on the field, he wasn't just good. He was great. He was incredible at Stanford. He played a huge role in turning that program around. He was a 2-time All-American, a 2-time Heisman Trophy runner-up, the first pick in the draft by the Colts. The guy was a can't-miss pick, and he lived up to the hype. Every time he played 16 games, he was a Pro Bowler. How many times did the Colts win because of this guy? How many times did he single-handedly carry them to a win? And how much better would he have been now that he actually has an offensive line that can protect him? And by the way, a good way not to have your franchise quarterback retire before turning 30 is to put a legitimate offensive line in front of him before he turns 30. There is that. And how many more moments would there be like him bringing Indy back from down 38 to 10 in the second half to beat Kansas City 45-44 in the postseason? And don't come in and degrade this decision by saying that Andrew Luck is just weird, man. He's just a different cat, yo. He's complicated. We're inscrutable. We'll never really figure this guy out. Why? Because he has interests outside of football? Because he likes ping pong? Because he travels to Europe? That doesn't make the guy weird or unusual. It makes him human. It makes him a person with interests and with a life. Yes, he's on a team that could win a Super Bowl. Yes, he's coming off the best year of his career. This guy missed all of 2017 and then came back and played better than he ever had before. That's tough. That's badass. Doesn't make the guy soft. But a Super Bowl ring doesn't matter if you can't walk. An MVP trophy doesn't matter if you can't remember it. And a gold jacket doesn't mean jack if you can't put it on. Guy made the right choice. He made the right choice. He made the best choice. I'm happy he made that choice. A lot of you seem to have this amazing threshold for his pain and no concern for the quality of the rest of his life. This guy gave it everything he had. And now he's had enough and is ready to move on with his life. I would suggest that some of you do the same thing with yours. And the fact that some of you won't let this guy go or won't turn the page leads me to believe that you got no life to move on to. But this guy does. And he is. And he's doing the right thing. 1-800-636-8686. I know a number of you don't see it that way, which is fine. You're wrong, but it's fine. I've got no issue with this at all. With Charles Robinson. My man, Charles, what's up? How are you?
I'm doing less well than I was a week ago.
How come? Talk to me. What's up?
Been a few things that have happened that have made the typically beginning to lull late end of the preseason a little spicier. So I just want to know, like, how did you absorb Andrew Luck's retirement? Where were you and what went through your head when you heard this?
Hey, man, I'm doing this interview. No, it's fair, actually. You know where I was? I was in Lubbock, Texas. I was in Lubbock, Texas to talk to the head basketball coach at Texas Tech. So I was taking that all in there, but I saw the reaction, and I was kind of gathering it all in, getting ready for this show this morning because I was not on the air yesterday. I was going to say to you, what was your initial reaction to the news that Luck was retiring?
I didn't believe it. Like, I didn't. It was funny because what happened actually was our producer, I was in the middle of working on some stuff, and so I wasn't online. I wasn't, you know. All of a sudden, I start getting all these text messages. The first one I pull up is our producer for our podcast. It's just WTF, but he didn't follow it with any information, which is kind of scary in our current climate.
Right. Like, it could be anything.
It could be anything nowadays. So, of course, I'm like, okay, either I just got fired, or we're nuking a hurricane, or it could be any number of things. So I went to Twitter. Obviously, I saw what, you know, Adam Schefter had dropped, which kudos to him. Unbelievable. And I was like, no way it's a parody account. There's no way that's true. These people are stupid. And I start looking and I'm like, wow, this is real. And then next thing you know, it's just like popping. All these guys across the league, you know, whether I'm texting them or they're texting me, they're like, is this true? What are you hearing? Why did this happen? You know, is there something going on? I think it just stunned every. I thought the greatest reaction was when Jason Garrett was told in his press conference. You see Jason Garrett, he almost shrinks like 3 inches just from like sitting there and trying to process the words that he had just heard. It made no sense.
We're talking to Charles Robinson. He's a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo. You know, as I think about it as well, when I was in Texas, I did do that. I tweeted WTF, and I left it that. I mean, what did you think when you saw his press conference and then laid out the reasons behind his decision and all the pain that he had gone through? Then what did you think?
I thought he was relieved. Like, that's when as I watched it, I was like, he almost seems relieved. Like, he was smiling a lot. Like, he obviously there were the tearful moments. But it felt like he was kind of getting this off his chest that had been weighing on him for a while. And it was odd because it was being released in the way that he had not anticipated. Obviously, it was supposed to happen the next day. His parents were flying in, like all this different stuff. And then he comes off the field. People are booing him. It's like the most chaotic moment it could have possibly been. Like you said, he's wearing a T-shirt. Like, and then yet he seemed like it was this release, like just getting it off his chest. And when he talked about all the injuries, I sat there and I thought the same thing I thought when Barry Sanders retired, Calvin Johnson, even Gronk. I'm like, this guy's coming back, right? Like, this guy's coming. This is just an overreaction. But then when I listened to him, all that entered my mind is, this sounds like done. Like, he's thought this through. He clearly, this has been a problem for a long time, and he is definitely looking at the next multiple decades ahead, not next year.
Everybody knows the risks about driving drunk. You could get into a crash. People could get hurt, even killed. But let's take a moment and look at some surprising stats. Nearly 29 people in the United States die every single day in alcohol-impaired vehicle crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. Even though drunk driving fatalities have fallen by a third in the last three decades, drunk driving crashes still claim more than 10,000 lives every year. Many people are unaware that driving while high can be just as dangerous. In 2015, 42% of drivers killed in crashes tested positive for drugs. Not so harmless, is it? And get this, from 2007 to 2015, marijuana use among drivers killed in crashes doubled. So the truth is, driving while high is deadly. Stop kidding yourself. If you're impaired from alcohol or drugs, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. Drive sober or get pulled over. Charles Robinson is our guest. So what do you make of people suggesting that Andrew Luck might not be that tough, that retirement isn't actually a retirement, but he's just quitting and looking for the easy way out?
I just don't buy it. I think you don't know. People have to understand the nature of those injuries. And like, so for one of them, the lacerated kidney, you know, when he's urinating blood. So when I was in college, I had a roommate who lacerated his kidney in a high-speed car accident. That's how that happened. And he kind of went through the same thing. His kidney function wasn't right for a couple of months. He went through urinating blood. Like, imagine that. Like, you're a football player, and he finished a game with a lacerated kidney. So you get into a high-speed car accident, then you go back out for more high-speed car accidents the rest of that game. Right. That's one thing. Then the labrum, then, you know, the foot problem that's obviously been something that's been lingering for a while, the ribs. It's just the litany of injuries for the longest time. You know, you get worn down by it. And I think people have to understand we're entering an era where the money is so big in the NFL. Guys like Gronk, guys like Andrew Luck, they can start to listen to their body rather than sitting there and going, you know, what about all this money I'm left on the, you know, I'm going to be leaving on the table. Andrew Luck earned $100 million in cash. Well, you can listen to that and listen to your body rather than sitting there and going, well, there's $300 million left on the table. Some guys I think are going to be more inclined to listen to their body. And I'll give you one quick story here.
Sure.
Like, I know I'm taking up time, but here's a quick story to maybe understand why Andrew Luck's definitive. A couple years ago, I was talking to Peyton Manning. He says to me, I remember when Andrew Luck was you know, in this process of deciding whether or not he was going to come out, you know, his junior year at Stanford. So, you know, Manning's phone rings, it's Luck. He thinks, this kid's calling me to ask my advice about whether I should go to the NFL. He answers, Luck called him to say, yeah, I'm going back. I just want to let you know I'm going back. Like, I'm not seeking your advice. I've thought this through on my own. I'm analytical about it. What I'm actually asking you now is, now that I'm going back, let's talk about what I'm going to go through my last year at Stanford. I think that speaks a little bit to how he formulates things in his mind and makes decisions in his own mind without listening to other people. If you're not going to listen to Peyton Manning about the biggest decision of your life, you're going to listen to yourself going into the NFL, you're probably going to do the same thing going out.
It's a good story. I like that. I'm glad you shared that. All right, so what about the Colts fans? Although I didn't ask you specifically about the dopes that were booing him, you kind of got into that when you explained that you have to understand what this guy, what everybody who's ever played in the NFL has had to go through. But do the Colts owe their fans, the fans who have bought season tickets, do they owe them anything to make this thing right?
I think there is a fair question to be asked. You know, given that, look, Irsay came out at one point, what kind of raised my eyebrow was when Irsay came out and said that, you know, he clearly had known that, you know, Andrew Luck was thinking about this for a period of time. And he told, you know, Andrew Luck, he was like, I was looking at it like from a father standpoint, you know, I'm telling him to take your time, think this through. Well, they know this is happening. You know, they know that this is hanging in the balance. And then there came a point where they knew and had to actually make the decision to not claw back money. They knew he's out of the equation for us. Whatever season tickets you sold during that span, you probably owe a refund, honestly. Like, or you owe the ability for people to return those season tickets. Because as I wrote about this, I'm like, look, when you pay Bruce Springsteen prices, you don't want to see someone else in front of the E Street Band. Like, you're going to see Bruce Springsteen. He's one of the rare quarterbacks who sells tickets. Tom Brady, Cam Newton, Aaron Rodgers. There are a few of these guys, Patrick Mahomes. When those guys are out of the equation, you have to sit there and weigh, is this really fair to our fans? I know no one wants to worry about being fair to the fans, but I would just focus it through this prism. You just said to Andrew Luck, hey, circumstances change for you. We could get our $24.8 million in unearned bonuses back from you, but we're going to let you walk with that. Now you're going to turn around to your fans and you're going to go, hey, we know circumstances have changed, but we're keeping your hundreds or thousands of dollars. Not a great PR optic at the very least for the Colts.
So really quickly, let me ask you about that near $25 million in bonus money that they could try to fight for and try to get back. Is it because, quote, circumstances change and maybe that's a going away gift to him? Or are they trying to leave a good taste in his mouth in the event that they try to convince him to come back down the road?
I'm with you. I think it's the latter, and I think it's the good take. I think it's them sitting there going, look, he's going to turn 30 in a week or 2 weeks. There's a large window here. This is a guy who could return in a year or 2 years or 3 years. Let's not burn that bridge. Let's go ahead and say, keep the money. Let's not do what the Lions did with Barry Sanders or Calvin Johnson and you know, make their defining piece who could still come back into the equation irate. Let's ride this out and see what happens. I think it's a smart investment. And, you know, to me, just be prepared for Andrew Luck to be connected to every quarterback needy team the next 5 years, because it's going to happen. Every time a team loses a guy, people go, what about Andrew Luck?
Sign up and be an O Rewards member today and earn 1 point for every dollar spent. Receive your rewards twice as fast and on the go when you provide your email address. O Rewards members get $5 back for every $150 they spend. It's fast, it's easy, it's free, and it's only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. See store or orewards.com for details. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. You know, some of the dopes that are mad at Andrew Luck, like mad at Andrew Luck for that decision. Even worse, the losers who are saying, this guy's not tough. He's soft. He's a quitter. He's looking for the easy way out. Not that I should have to do this, because to me, his toughness is not up for debate. But apparently among some morons, it is. So let me give you a brief history of the injuries as provided by Zach Kiefer, who covers the Colts. Among other things, Luck tore cartilage into ribs. He had a partially torn abdomen. He had a lacerated kidney that had him pissing blood. He had at least one concussion. He had a torn labrum in his throwing shoulder. And then he had that mysterious calf ankle issue that led to this. Now, that's a quick summary. Those are the ones that we know about. It doesn't include the busted up digits, the jacked up feet, the shots to the head, and so on. Again, we're talking about a guy who was pressured on more than 1,100 dropbacks in his first 70 games. He was sacked more than anybody else in the league during that time. And yet somehow, as the checkdown points out, this is a guy who used to congratulate and encourage opponents when they hit him.
That's it, big man. Hey, nice hit, buddy. Oh, nice hit, man. Good hit, big boy. Yeah, buddy, good hit. Thanks, man. Hey, you're a menace out there, boy. Good job, my boy. Nah, you're fine, man. It's football, you know what I mean?
I mean, does that sound like a guy who doesn't love the game? If that were Brett Favre, y'all would be like, woo! Damn, Brett loves the game. Man, he played for free. Just like being out there on the sandlot in his Wranglers. Man, nobody loves football like Brett Favre. Yeah, but look, he's a coward. He's soft. He doesn't want it. You know, again, this is a guy who led the league in being sacked at the start of his career. A guy who played through a torn labrum. A guy who had a kidney ripped open and was pissing blood. I know I've said that three times. I want to be very clear about that. Have you ever urinated blood? I haven't. Despite all that, the same guy was booed. The same guy who played through all that was booed off the field Saturday by many of his own fans. Man, bloody shame. Bloody urine. Bloody shame. What a horrible look. Horrible look on those who were there who did that. And I'm not saying that everybody who was there did that, but those who were there who did that, that is a terrible look. Like, I don't care if you're angry that you paid for season tickets and you're not going to get to see him play this year. I mean, screw that. That's just embarrassing. That's disgraceful. How about instead of booing this guy, you thank this guy? How about a tip of the cap and some recognition of the physical and mental pain that he's had to endure? If anybody ever deserved a standing ovation, it's Luck, because he laid it out on the line week in and week out. Again, let me make this point. Not tough. He missed an entire season and came back better than ever. His mentality was, and this is what I always loved about this guy. Whenever I think about Andrew Luck and all the great plays he made, this is one of my favorite plays ever. The mentality being that if the offense turned the ball over, and not just him, but the offense, he was going to be the guy who was going to drill the guy who picked up the rock. And that goes back to his time at Stanford. Don't believe me? Ask USC's Sharice Wright if Luck was tough or not.
Tight formation. Taylor. Loose ball. USC has it, and Luck saved a touchdown by Creamy. Sharice Wright, are you kidding?
Look that up. I mean, the audio doesn't quite do it justice, but look that up. Look at the stick he puts on that guy. Luck went into every game knowing he was going to get the crap beaten out of him, never complained, never blamed his teammates, and by the way, never blamed the front office, who didn't do him any favors. So don't blame him. He never blamed anybody. So if you want to blame somebody, if you need somebody to blame, blame the previous front office. The one that thought that Luck was so tough that there was no need to even put an offensive line in front of him. The one that ran him out behind 40 different offensive line combinations in his first 83 games. They were the ones who cost you Andrew Luck. They were the ones who put him in this situation. They were the ones who ended his career prematurely. So you want to say this guy's not tough. You want to say this guy's soft. I'm going to say you're a loser if you say that. And you're not even close to this guy's toughness. Forget lasting seasons in the NFL. How many of you saying this would last a single series in the NFL? I know I wouldn't. But notice I'm not the one saying he's not tough. It's a fact. Just like it's a fact that Luck is not leaving because he's tired. Your idea of tired and his idea of tired are two totally different things. This isn't just something that he can sleep off. This is not something where he can go away for a month on vacation and it will be all right and that's going to go away. On Saturday night, did that look like a guy who was skipping out on his team? Did it look like a guy looking to duck out the back door? Hell no. It's a guy who's poured everything he has into the game of football, a game that he loves for his entire life, and now he has to walk away. That's tough, man. That's not easy. I don't care how much money you have in the bank. That's not easy. And don't come in here and say, hey, Rome, I'd happily trade jobs with him for all the money he makes. Again, if you're only seeing this in terms of money, you're telling on yourself. If you see his decision in terms of toughness, you're telling on yourself again. You're telling me you don't know pain and you don't know football. Because I don't see too many football players calling him out. In fact, I don't see any. Not the guys he played with, not the guys he played against, and not the guys who came before him. I don't see any NFLers or former NFLers who are not saying, hey man, it's sad, but congratulations. I get it. I understand it. You know why? Because they all did play the game at that level. They all know the price you have to pay to play the game at that level. They all know it's not a matter of if you get hurt in the NFL, but when and how badly. So no, I don't see any of his teammates saying he's soft because they know the pain he suffered. They know the work he's put in. They know the pounding he has taken. I'll tell you what I do see, though. Talking really tough from their couches and their cushy armchairs. I see a lot of Twitter tough guys saying that Luck is soft or weak for leaving. And again, that tells me everything you need to know about those guys. You know what it tells me? You got to take a run at a guy who is legitimately tough to make you feel better about you. Like thumbing out some edgy tweet and being controversial is tough. I mean, if you're saying that about a guy like that, you know nothing about really. It's dumb. It's demeaning. It's embarrassing. Terrible look. And if you take a light, if you have a take like that and you don't realize how bad that looks, man, that's even sadder. Because there's nothing soft or weak about playing even one game in the NFL. How about this? Go down on the sidelines. You've been to NFL games, but have you ever been on the sideline? Go down to the sideline, and you'll see that that's not a game. It's a series of car wrecks over and over and over again. So anybody who steps on that field for even one series is tough as hell. And to do it as long as this guy did, and to take the shots that this guy did, you got to be one of the toughest people on the planet. Friday night, we are joined by Paul Christ. Paul, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Good, Jim. How are you doing?
Good, good. Paul, so it's game week. How is life right now, and how good does it feel to be a few days away from starting the season officially?
It is an exciting time of the year, obviously. And you know, you think back and how much time, you know, not just our team, but every kid that's playing college football, you know, all the work in the wintertime and spring football and summer and fall camps, and now for the season to be upon us, it's always exciting, and looking forward to this week. And you know, you're gonna find out more about your team, and you know, we've got a good challenge ahead of us playing South Florida down there. But it's an exciting time of the year, certainly.
Paul Christ joining us. In terms of that challenge, you are gonna play South Florida in August. So as a result, hydration has been a really big talking point. How do you go about preparing the players for that and making sure everybody's right mentally and physically for that challenge?
Well, you do try to do as much as you can as far as what you control, and certainly, you know, hydrating, you know, really all week, and certainly from this point on, you know, got to make sure they're doing that, not where they're having to play catch up. And you know, it is hard to, you can't mimic and simulate the heat or the humidity that we anticipate getting, and so you just got to try to do as well as you can, prepping them for. But you know, we've had, actually, it's been a beautiful fall camp weather-wise, which isn't necessarily helpful for the opener, but you try to do as much as you can, and then you know, you've got to be able to embrace it. And certainly, you know, this time of year, you know, we got a lot of guys that are healthy and ready to go, and going to need everyone that goes on that trip to be able to participate and help us play and help us win.
Wisconsin head football coach Paul Christ is joining us. So why don't we talk about a few of those guys? I mean, there's a number of different places where I could start when it comes to this year's team, but why don't we start with Jonathan Taylor? He's coming off a sophomore year where he rushed for nearly 2,200 yards. He won the Doak Walker Award. Now, you've been around a lot of really special running backs in your time at Wisconsin. Where does Taylor rank among the best in school history?
Well, it's a good place to start when you're talking about our team. And you know, what he's done his first 2 years is really remarkable. And you're right, we've been fortunate. And I've been fortunate to be around a lot of great backs. And you know, he's right in the conversation with the best of them. And you know, it's each back's a little bit different, you know, so when you just compare one to the other. But, you know, and it's fun, and it's really been neat for me to see him kind of get the chance to meet and talk with and be around. You know, this summer, Melvin Gordon was back, and James White, and to see just those three interacting, and I think that obviously, you know, Jonathan, he looks up to him, you know, and appreciates and knows what they did. And you know, Ron Danes, he's in town and around campus, and you know, Terrell Fletcher, who played, you know, a number of years in the NFL, came back, and it's fun to see certainly JT, and he appreciates what they've done, but really to see how they interact with Jonathan, and you know, there's a mutual respect. And so, you know, I think Jonathan said it best when he says, if you're in the conversation with that group, that's it's pretty humbling. And he is a great, obviously a great football player, but when you're around him and you see how he works and how he treats people and how he goes about every day on and off the field. He's truly an impressive young man.
Paul Chris is joining us. You know, when I was back there last year and I saw the Rutgers game, I saw to a certain extent what you're talking about because I saw Ron Dayne, and I saw how excited Ron Dayne was to be around the program. And it's not just the former players who come back and give back. You've got a number of Badgers who are on your staff. In fact, you've got 5 of the 11 coaches on your staff who are Badgers, which is tied for the most alumni on any staff in FBS. Now, that doesn't mean that the non-alumni on the staff are not equally committed, but how valuable is it to have Badgers coaching Badgers?
You know, I think it certainly is something that you appreciate, and it's, you know, I think because of all the circumstances, it makes it a little bit unique. You know, when you're putting together a staff, you just want to put together the best group of people and guys that can truly help, you know, the players that they're coaching, you know, grow on and off the field. And since so much of my time was at Wisconsin or tied in with Wisconsin, you know, you find yourself going to people that you truly know. You know who they are, you know, when it's good times, when times are tough. And yet I think that it just adds another element to understanding and appreciating this place. And you're right, though, that, you know, some of our best coaches are ones also that haven't, you know, this is their experience with Wisconsin. I think having that blend is healthy, and certainly feel fortunate to, one, be doing what I'm doing anywhere, but to be able to do it here and with a group of people, it makes it really special.
Wisconsin head football coach Paul Christ is joining us. They open up their season against South Florida. You mentioned, or I should say you named Jack Cohn, the starting quarterback. Now, he'd been playing with the ones throughout practice, so it's not exactly a shock when the depth chart's released, but what did you see in him that let you know that he was the man for the job?
You're right. You know, it wasn't a shock, certainly, to the players. And, you know, I've loved seeing kind of how he's progressed from last year. And certainly last year had some, you know, some very good moments, and then had some moments, especially in his first couple starts, where, you know, there's a lot to learn from and grow from. And I think he's taken advantage of that. You know, when you can take a look at that kind of body of work that he had last year, and how can you learn from it and grow from it, work on, you know, some of the things in the actual kind of skills or mechanical parts of that. And then also just, I think, being around the team and continuing to demonstrate, you know, who he is, that's been impressive. And I've liked, you know, the way that all of our quarterbacks have played in fall camp. And yet, you know, Jack, I think it's, you know, has earned the right to start, and we got to keep developing. We got some good young quarterbacks behind him, so I like that group. But Jack certainly earned it, and our team is confident with him and appreciates who he is, and I think everyone believes gives us the best chance right now.
You know, and then as head coach, you have to like hearing this. They're confident in him, but he's confident in your culture. He said as much, quote, "I'm confident in the culture of this program. I feel like the culture that Coach Chris and all the other coaches have put in place is going to remain strong throughout all the ups and downs we experienced last year. The culture is what breeds winning." First of all, as head coach, how happy are you to hear that? And then how would you describe the culture that you want to put in place there?
Yeah, it does make you feel good, and I think that's the most important thing that you do. And you do know every team, and it doesn't matter. You know, a couple years ago we had a great season and ran the table. There's still adversity within that, and there's going to be good times. And for players to kind of recognize that, know that, you know, there's kind of a balance. You know, you've got to bring your part and do your part in it, but you don't have to. And the great thing about being on a team is you're not doing it by yourself. And I do appreciate and think that the important thing is, you know, guys care about each other. And I think this team truly does care about each other. And you hear it all the time. But what's fun is I think, you know, these guys actually believe it and feel it and know it. And so I think that gives you a lot of confidence. I think it also puts a, you know, nice sense of accountability or responsibility to the group. If you know everyone's doing their part, why wouldn't you? And I think it's a chance for everyone to kind of uplift each other. And we know that it's never going to be perfect. And, you know, might have a great day or great game, but not every player did. And how can you help them through that, knowing that they're going to have your back? So it's something you got to work on every day and all the time, and you've never arrived at it, but I do appreciate this group and the way they're approaching it.
We're talking to Paul Christ for a couple of more moments. You know, when you mention accountability and responsibility, it seems to me that a lot of other programs, if they go 8-5 and they win a bowl game, that's a reason to party. But for you in Wisconsin, I mean, you could even argue maybe it was a bit of a disappointment. How did you go about processing that and learning from it?
Well, it is interesting, right? Because, you know, it's all perspective and whatnot, and I think that, you know, we tried to just draw on the last couple seasons, really what these guys have known to be their experience, and then you've got a group that's, you know, maybe was only part of one of those years, or some, you know, the freshmen weren't part of it at all, and just what are the takeaways that you can go, and guys have been, in this way you appreciate, they've been open and honest and sharing those, and you can learn from all of our experiences, the good and the bad, and really, you know, there's going to be talk, you know, each year on what this team could be or should be, and all that matters is who are you really, and so I think if we can be in that moment, I think you have your best chance to maximize it and just try to make the most of those moments, and I think then they're going to enjoy their experience, and so I've appreciated this group's done a good job, you know, the good and the bad. They've kind of just owned it, first of all, and then, okay, what can we take away from it and apply so this year we can be a little bit better.
And then, Paul, one last thing is, some people know back in the day, you lived next door to Mark Johnson, the Wisconsin women's hockey coach, a USA Hockey icon and legend. My son, right. Jake, and my wife, Janet, just spent some time with Mark and Tony Granato yesterday on campus. What kind of conversations did you have with Mark back in the day?
Well, it was Mark and his wife, Leslie. They're great, great people, and obviously, you know, has a heck of a history, and even what he's doing now, you know, but he's you can talk to him, and I love just picking his brain, hearing what he'd have to say about anything from kind of what he goes through as a coach, as a dad. You know, you talk about two of the best people when you talk about Tony Granato and Mark Johnson, and I think that's one thing that I've really appreciated. Coach Alvarez is hired really good people, and there's always something to pick from and learn from, and while you're doing that, you're sitting around, and I'm a hockey fan, so when I'm talking to those two, there's a little bit of that excitement, just this is really who it is. I mean, I remember following Mark and you know, certainly the 1980 Olympic story and on that, and yet he's so humble, and you got to bring it up, otherwise he's not gonna bring it to you. But it's great people.
Yeah, it's funny to say that, because my son, who is 18, really does not have a background for that sort of thing. He didn't, right. I mean, he knows the story about the team, but he didn't know Mark Johnson. He didn't find out till after the fact how accomplished he was and how pedigreed he was. And Jake, my son, was just blown away, like, Dad, you cannot believe how big this guy is, how humble he is, and what a great guy he is. Like, he literally didn't know anything about him until long after he'd already left.
Oh, that's, and even like, you know, that age group, right? And they know about the movie,
right.
Miracle, but that's about it. And no, it was actually a true story. And I remember when Mark spoke to our team, you know, and a lot of guys were like, wow, and then they put it all together, just like what you're saying. And it's, you know, I remember Tony saying, you know, arguably in many circles, there's the best American hockey player ever. And kind of like we're talking with Jonathan, if you're in that conversation, it's pretty impressive. But who he is as a person, what's really what makes him unique.
Yeah, and not only that, but your running back coach, John Settle, said, I'm not even sure that kid knows how good he can be. Like, he plays as if the guys around him are better, but he's not even sure how good that Jonathan knows he is or could be. Is that a fair statement?
I think it is a fair statement. I think that's one of the – and it's been great for all of our players to see. You know, that Jonathan's got a tremendous work ethic. I think that's part of his competitive edge, and I think it starts from, you know, how he was raised as a kid. And I think he certainly has – confidence in himself, but he also knows that he hasn't arrived, and he will work on every little detail, and that's what's fun, and certainly I think the great ones, you know, have that ability, that they have that talent, and they have the work ethic, and you put it together, it's some special things can happen, and certainly, you know, he's on that track, and you know, he'd be the first one, and we shouldn't say it either. He's not arrived by any means, but it's he is fun to be around and to see him go through this, and every step of his journey, it's been fun to watch and be a part of.
Wisconsin, number 17 in the preseason coaches poll, and they open up their season at USF Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. Their head coach, Paul Christ, joining us. Paul, it's so good to have you back. I appreciate your time very much. Look forward to seeing you again soon, and thanks for doing that, Paul.
Thanks so much, Jim. Appreciate it.
It's a brand new season. Antonio Brown is on the Raiders. Le'Veon Bell is a member of the Jets. Odell Beckham is in C-Town. Andrew Luck is retired. But the one thing that has not changed is where I'm putting my money down for all the games. MyBookie is the place to bet on football every weekend. MyBookie's got better bonuses and more prop bets than any other sports book, period. And this year, they're hosting the first online handicapping super contest. First place is guaranteed to win at least 100 grand, and it only costs 100 bucks to enter. All you have to do is pick five NFL games against the spread every week to climb the leaderboard and score your share of the huge cash prize pool. You want to move on this thing right now. Get up to a $1,000 first deposit bonus and double your first deposit. Use the promo code ROME, R-O-M-E, to activate that offer. That's an amazing offer. Use the promo code ROME to activate. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie, M-Y-B-O-O-K-I-E. Do not forget to use the promo code ROME when you create your account and get your bonus. Bet, win, get paid. Ross Tucker is joining us. Now, Ross, the thing about a moving target is you can't hit it. Hard to hit a moving target, and you're constantly on the move. It's good to have you back, Ross. Exactly where are you right now?
Yeah, I'm looking out at the Philadelphia Eagles practice fields right now. I'm at the NovaCare Complex. It's been really cool for me growing up outside of Philly. This is my first year as the Eagles preseason television analyst. They play the Jets Thursday night in the fourth preseason game. So actually about to meet with Carson Wentz and Brandon Graham and Doug Peterson in about 35 minutes. So it worked out perfectly to be able to come on with you. And I can tell you this much, Jim, they got a really good team, man. I mean, a lot has to go right to get back to the Super Bowl. We all know that health, and you have to win the games in January when it counts. But this is, at least on paper, the best Eagles roster I've seen in a while.
Ross Tucker is joining us. I see it the same way. I agree with you. Now, Ross, you made the point that you were surprised, but you were not shocked by Andrew Luck's retirement. Lay that out for me. What do you mean by that?
Well, certainly surprised, just because I hadn't heard any rumblings of it. But if you go back, I can remember a quote from him during the season last year when he said, "It's really nice because football is finally fun again." And I can relate to that. I can remember, this is really weird, Jim, my best year in the NFL was 2004 with the Buffalo Bills. I started 13 games. We went 9-4 in those games, including one like 6 or 7 in a row. But I can remember, Jim, that in December, the end of that season, I had a herniated disc in my back. So I was playing just because I wanted to play, but also I had a $350,000 playing time bonus, which was huge money to me. So before every game, I was taking 2 Loratabs, 2 Flexerols, a shot of Toradol in my butt. And I distinctly remember before games thinking, I hate this. I hate football. I just can't wait until this game was over. It was just the combination of the pain, the stress, knowing I was about to go out there against Gerard Warren or Bryant Young or whoever I was playing that day, despite the fact that I was hurting that bad. It was bad, man. I mean, I remember the last game against the Steelers. If we won, we made the playoffs. My wife had to tie my shoes in the morning when I left the house, and yet I played every snap against the Steelers. We lost. I was disappointed that we didn't make the playoffs, but part of me was a little bit relieved, Jim, that it was just finally over, that I could stop putting myself through that much pain. It's hard to explain. Everybody out there is playing with something. But when you are really, really hurting, it's just not fun anymore. I mean, I even heard Gronk say that earlier this morning.
Ross Tucker joining us. Ross, that is an amazing anecdote that you share, and what you had to take, what you had to go through just to get on the field, and how much you could hate a game that you love so much. So when you look at the list of injuries that Luck suffered, and these are the ones that we know about, when you look at that list, what kind of thoughts do you have?
That the people that booed him in Indianapolis live very, very sad lives, and my guess is have a void that will never be filled. And maybe that's being harsh, Jim, and maybe I'm not remembering my roots as a fan. And you know how it is. You know these guys now. Every one of my buddies and my sister and my wife, they look at it so much differently now that they actually know or knew an NFL player. Even like cutdowns coming down on Saturday. I can remember, oh, thank God they got rid of that guy. Oh, yeah, get rid of that guy. My buddies never say that anymore, because they know that that's like an actual dude who they play beer pong with, has buddies from high school and grew up with, and they make fun of each other. He just happens to be better at football than everybody else. I always say this, picture Andrew Luck is your brother or your son or even your best friend, and picture him getting booed off the field the last time he's on an NFL field because he won't destroy his body more for your 3 hours of Sunday entertainment. Are you kidding me? And this argument, Jim, well, it's 2 weeks before the season. Not 2 weeks before Andrew Luck's season. People are acting, even like Berline and those guys, Jim, they're acting like he was healthy and was going to play. If he was healthy and was going to play week one, he wouldn't have done this. He's not healthy. He doesn't know when he would be. And I'll tell you this, Jim, he's a more honorable guy than I am. He has to rehab the calf ankle thing anyway. I would have rehabbed that calf ankle thing in Indianapolis in their facility for the next 4 months for $15 million.
Right. Exactly. I mean, Ross Tucker just absolutely killing it today. Like, Ross, for those who are saying, and I'm seeing a lot of it on Twitter too, yeah, well, he handled it wrong. How was he supposed to handle this? What was he supposed to do? He's been dealing with it for the past 6 months and doing everything he possibly could to work his way through it, and it didn't work. And to your point, Ross, he could have stayed there and rehabbed and gotten paid, but he didn't. He didn't.
Well, according to social media, Jim, he was supposed to retire in March or April before the draft, even though he, wait for it, didn't know he wanted to retire then. I mean, this logic is crazy. By the way, they actually have a darn good backup quarterback in Jacoby Brissett. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they still win the division. Do you think Andrew Luck wanted this? Do you think he wanted to retire? He's like the nicest guy I've ever met. Do you think he wants to let down every single person in that building, hundreds of people, the players, the coaches, the owner, the executives, the fans? It's absolutely the last thing that Andrew Luck wanted to do, but he got to a point where he felt like it was his only choice. And I truly believe, Jim, I can speak to this. I think him getting married and having a child on the way, I think that affects it as well. The worst cut that ever happened to me was the first time after I got married, because my wife had left her job in finance in New York City to move to Buffalo to be with me. And then I got cut. And so my failure was finally affecting other people and not just me. And that really hurt. And I think him having a child on the way in November really crystallized things for him about what's really important, what really matters.
Ross Tucker is joining us. You know, Ross, back to that point about him getting booed off the field in his last game, probably as an NFL player, it was not supposed to play out like that. Now, you're a member of the media now, so you can also speak to this. When you take a step back, Adam Schefter had a job to do. He did his job. But what do you make of the fact that somebody leaked it to Schefter?
Disgusting. That really, really bothers me. If I had to have a hierarchy, and by the way, the Colts have great fans, Jim, so I don't think, you know, a couple hundred people that were probably drinking. Look, they're the people that are there in the fourth quarter of a preseason game. We can have another conversation. So they're number two for me. The disappointing fans that booed are number two. My number one public enemy, Jim, is whoever leaked that, because they're the ones that, A, put Luck in a terrible situation, B, put the fans in a bad situation where they had to be there or disappointed in hearing it that way before they actually knew why Luck was retiring or what was going on. You know how it is, though. Somebody in that organization, because it definitely didn't come from Luck's camp, somebody wanted to curry favor with Adam Schefter. Somebody wanted to get a favor down the line, or somebody wanted to hook up Schefter. And kudos to Schefter. It's huge news. He broke it. He did exactly what he's supposed to do. But that person that put their selfish self-interest ahead of letting Andrew Luck do it with some dignity and on his terms, I think it's awful. Although I will say this, Jim, I've heard Adam a couple places now say that they kind of knew this was happening Wednesday, Thursday, and that they originally were going to have the press conference on Friday at 3. They changed it to Sunday at 3. That's a major screw-up by the Colts front office. That is not news that's going to last until Sunday. He's telling players Thursday and Friday. I'm actually shocked it didn't come out till Saturday night, because what happens is he tells some of his teammates, a couple of them tell their agent or their wife, they tell somebody. I'm actually amazed it didn't even get out till Saturday night.
My man, Caleb Cox in Indy. Caleb, brother, what's going on?
Romy, what's going on, brother?
How you doing, man?
Good, man. Hey, I got to call in for my boy Luck. So I've been a season ticket holder for 36 years. Family, we've been there since day one. I've gone through the Jack Trudeaus, all the old quarterbacks beforehand, man. But those guys that were booing Andrew, those are the guys on the street that got the preseason tickets for $5, for $8, who snuck down from the top seats to the bottom. And those guys they're not going to be there during the season tickets like we are. We support those guys no matter what the decision is. And for myself, man, I played 4 years of college football as a walk-on linebacker, Division I level. And the injuries that I have, my knees are shot, my shoulders are shot, I have head injuries and stuff like that, but I love the game of football, and I did whatever I could to play the game of football. So with Andrew, you know, walking away on his own terms, I have nothing but respect for that. Leaving all that money on the table, it's nothing but respect. So I got to go out. I got to say, man, that you love the game, but you know that you're going to give something back to the game. And Andrew got to that point where he didn't want to give anything back anymore. So that's all I got. I want to say War Randall, War my boy Cruz, win the U.S. Nationals this weekend in Indy. I'm out.
Good luck, man. Good job, Caleb. Caleb Cox, rack him. Let's go to Chapel Hill. Tobin. Tobin, what's up?
Hey, Romy. Thanks again for the Vine. First of all, congratulations on the Hall of Fame. You are the gold standard, and I told you on September the 8th, 2004, that you had the best show on the radio. I meant it then, and I still mean it now. I wanted to weigh in really quick on Andrew Luck. You know, I'm not a big Luck supporter, and I'm actually much more concerned about Cam Newton's foot than Luck's future. But not only was I not surprised, but I think it's absolutely incredible that anyone with half a brain could take exception to this in any way. Okay, I've got two young adult children, and I've got nieces and nephews that are around Andrew Luck's age. And I'm telling you, these millennials do not mess around because, you know, they're smarter than us. Their brains adapt to faster information. They've had powerful computers in their hands for a long time. And you're not going to find a millennial who, under the age of 30, who has earned $100 million that's going to give away the best years of their life to more pain and rehab. So even if he looks like Paul Bunyan, I don't see why anyone's surprised that he wants to act like a reasonable modern human being. And I want to throw out something. Instead of triple U, how about triple I? People that think this are ill-informed, their opinions are ill-considered, and they're ill-equipped to deal with reality. Okay, and as far as reality, quick memo to the Panthers. 89 bottom line's not coming through that door, and I hope our guys can get up and catch and hold on to that ball because I don't know what the defense is going to look like, and neither Newton nor Olsen are in the prime of their careers. Unwar, getting schnockered on your own liquor and swinging on old guys. And congratulations again, Romy. I'm out.
Thank you, Tobin. Tobin in Chapel Hill going old school with a straight sports take and the triple I. Lauren in Naples is back in the jungle. Lauren, what's up?
Hey, Rome, what's up?
Hey, Lauren, what's up with you? Right to the front of the line, no less. How you doing?
Well, I just wanted to say, hey, I love the Barry Sanders take. He was my favorite growing up, and I just wanted to say it was awesome, dude.
Lauren, are you trying to call somebody while at the same time talk to me on the air? Because that won't work.
No, my cheek hit the 2 button.
All right, got it.
My
got
bad.
It. All right, so Barry Sanders was your guy growing up.
Yeah, that wasn't what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about Urban Meyer and kind of what a piece he is. And we're in football season now, and I'm a diehard Michigan fan. So I just wanted to – they're kind of funny, but they're not – sorry about that. What – Urban said about Alabama was
How do you do her like that, Alvin?
Not a very good call.
What, do you have like a 3-digit rule now? I said to Alvin, what's up, man? How do you do that? His response, and I quote, was, my cheek hit the buzzer. Let's go to Parody Larry. If Tobin can get through and Lauren can get through, why not get some horrible parody? Hello, Lawrence.
Jim, how are you, buddy?
Good. What's up?
Hey, listen, congrats on the Hall of Fame. I never got to that, but you deserved it, bud. Anyway, about Rick's vacation in SoCal, he seems to have had a great time, but, you know, when Silk and Rich Flores gave him charcuterie and Chardonnay. Rich was all class. He brought out Geneseo and pork roll. Anyway, he asked me to do a Google Dolls parody for him. Barbie Dolls. So this is for you, my brother, to the tune of Iris. Rick would give it all up to be noticed. That's why he's down in SoCal right now. It's the closest to heaven that he'll ever be. Always angry, sounds like a mad cow. Left the kid stuck at home with his daddy. Getting drunk with the clones is your life. And when this vacation is over, you'll be lucky to still have a wife.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Hey, Larry. Great Google Dolls parody. Did you Google them?
Good night now!